Warning, the following episode of Warcides Uncensored Mind contains explicit language and adult content. The thoughts and opinions stated on the show are reflective of A.J. Orsini and his guests exclusively. But seriously, guys, the show is called Uncensored. If you got a problem with bad language, I really don't give a shit.
Thunder buddies for life, right, Johnny?
Fucking right.
All right, come on, let's sing the thunder song.
All right.
When you hear the sound of thunder, don't you get too scared. Just grab your thunder buddy and say these magic words. Fuck you, thunder. You can suck my dick. You can't get me, thunder, because you're just God's fart.
Welcome to Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and now your host, A.J. Orsini.
How the hell is everybody out there? This is your boy, your main man, your Jeff's old brother from another mother. This is your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. This is A.J. Orsini, and I'm here today to drop, to bequeath onto all of you, episode 102, and today I am alone. Finally, a moment to gather my thoughts and put all this stuff in perspective. What a month! What a month of August for me. I had the 100th episode drop nigh but 2 weeks ago, something like that. Almost 3 weeks now, 2.5 weeks ago, dropped the 100th episode. I was joined by three great men. Joe Pombo, Brandon Lewis, Stephen James. We went over the whole shebang. That's available for download. A raucous of an episode. You need to check it out over at ajoum.podbean.com. Our episode 101 happened to fall deep within SummerSlam territory. It gave us just enough chance to do our annual SummerSlam roundtable. I was joined for that by Zachary Snow, Ace Andrews, and the lovely Hannah Harkness, and I am also making that available on ajoum.podbean.com. Of course, those were pre-SummerSlam. It was a pre-SummerSlam episode, so if you've already seen SummerSlam, you may not be as interested because it's all the stuff we're talking about leading up to it. But if you want to know how we fared on our predictions, and you want to know who the genius of the group is, which of course is me, and you want that validated, head over to the website now and check out those two episodes. But 102 is, it's just me. But it's still a special episode because I am not in the House of O. I'm actually several hundred miles away from the House of O. I'm on vacation! Yes, we are in the un-Sunshine State. I refuse to call it the Sunshine State because up until this very moment, as I am recording this early Saturday afternoon, I have yet to see much of this sun that I hear so much about down here in Florida. We got on the plane Thursday morning, and we arrived in Orlando Thursday afternoon, car in tow, hotel on fleek, if the kids are still saying that, and as soon as we got here, we turned the TV on, we're unpacking, we're getting comfy, we're getting our situation situated, and of course the news comes on to tell me that the remaining week, the entire week that I'm scheduled to be here in Florida, it's going to be cloudy, rain, and thunderstorms pretty much all week. Now, thus far, like I said, we got here on Thursday. And on Thursday, we got our money's worth. Rain, lots of it. But it cooled down enough for us to enjoy some of the amenities here at this wonderful hotel, the Marriott Harbor Lakes. This place has a water park attached to it. It's got multiple pools. My balls have been in every one of those areas. It rained a lot, but we got our money's worth in on that. We were concerned about Friday, yesterday, because we have tickets, or we had tickets, for Discovery Cove, which, if you're not familiar, is a huge water area. You could swim with fishes and natural springs and lazy river, all kinds of cool shit. But they schedule it by the day. So if you get rained out, or whatever the case may be, or thunderstorm out, or whatever the case, you have to reschedule the day, and we're only here for a few days. We're only here for about a week. So that would have been tough, and it did rain. But it was on and off, very light, nothing really crazy. And here in Florida, because it rains so much, they only really cancel or close things in case of lightning and thunder. So we're in water, Discovery Cove, we're in water, immersed in this bitch. And then it rains on top of us. That was actually pretty cool. I kept rising out of the water level like Delta Force there, pulling off that Chuck Norris with the fucking AK and just going off. It was like a mission in Saigon. But it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. We've been relaxing. I haven't been on social media much, in case you haven't noticed. I haven't really done too much. Actually, Facebook got concerned about my non-activity on Facebook. They started sending me messages and notifications on my phone that, hey, you haven't posted in a while. It's like, yeah, motherfucker, because I'm on vacation. My wife and I work all year for this 1 week, so yeah, I've taken a bit of a break. But not a break from Orsini's Uncensored Mind. The commitment continues. Yet another straight week of Orsini's Uncensored Mind goodness. We have been traveling around. My wife and my son are currently in the hotel pool waiting for my ass. So I'm going to give you guys the heads up. This is going to be a shorter than normal episode. I will not be here for the full 60 minutes. I don't have 60 minutes. To take away from my family to do this. I wanted to put out some new content, and I will, but I don't want to do it at the sacrifice of my family and my time here. There'll be plenty of time for Orsini's Uncensored Mind when I get back to New York. Until then, I am on vacation. But I did want to do a new episode because there's so many things going on. Whilst I am on vacation, the wrestling world is continuing on. This is probably the only time I'll get to talk about this stuff. I've got Hollywood Studios tomorrow. I've got Disney World the day after that. And then I've got Legoland. So I've got a lot of shit on my plate. Actually, I think Legoland's tomorrow. I'm not entirely sure of the order, how this is going to go. Yes, Legoland's tomorrow. And then Hollywood Studios on Monday. And then Disney Tuesday. And then we chill the fuck out on Wednesday. Probably put my balls in more of the amenities here at the Great Marriott Harbor Lakes. And they probably don't even know that Orsini's balls have literally been on almost everything here so far. My balls have been on the vending machine. My balls have been on the ice machine. My balls have been in their water park. My balls have definitely been on their water slides because my balls almost came out accidentally at one of those slides. Was it accidental? I don't know. I'll leave you with that. But my balls have literally been everywhere all over this resort. My balls have been in other resorts too. Unbeknownst to them, I won't say the names, but I know who you are, and you've been Orsini ballified. Hopefully one day that'll mean much more to you guys than it will right now. But yes, this is going to be one of the shorter episodes. I'm going to try to make it as long as I can, but at the same time, I'm itching. I'm itching to get back into the water. I got my swim attire on right now as we freaking speak. I got my attire on, and I am ready to go. But there are some things that have happened in the meantime. I was going to mention, actually I was asked a few times to mention, New Japan Pro. They just completed their G1 Climax tournament. I will go ahead and concede to the idea that it is not only today, but one of the world's, pro wrestling world's top tournaments in the world. New Japan Pro, the G1 Climax does nothing but make and build new stars. It's what it's been built for. It's what it does. The only problem that I have with discussing the G1 Climax is I just described to you guys my last 3 weeks. It's been really long, and I have not had a chance to keep tabs on literally everything that's been going on with the G1 Climax. It's been, what is it, like 16 days or 20 days or something like that of just straight-up pro wrestling New Japan action, and I just can't keep up with all of it, at least not this year. Because I've been just so jacked with all these different things. It's an annual event, so we'll get another chance next summer. But I just couldn't keep up with it. I just couldn't. I couldn't keep up with it as much as I wanted to and as much as I wanted to spend on it. On a few occasions, I sat back and I tried to put notes together. And there was a few episodes leading up where I would at least try to update you on the situation going on with G1 or the current status, but it was just too much. So I apologize for that, because I really didn't get the chance that I wanted to spend on that. But I will spend it. I don't have my 200th episode next year, My vacation will be planned ahead of time as opposed to what it was last year, which was a spur-of-the-moment deal. But I'll be in a much better position next summer to really go over this. But I did want to spend some time just really quickly just giving you guys kind of a general idea of how this whole thing took place this year. There were a lot of competitors. So the way that this normally works from what I'm gathering, remember, I'm just learning about this myself because I've always known about the G1, but to be honest with you, I've never really gotten the chance to commit to it the way that I truly wanted to over the years. So that's why I'm saying now I'm going to make it a personal mission of mine to go ahead and focus more on it next year. But as it would be the 2019, I'm looking for it right here. I got it right in front of me. Okay, so the 2019 G1 was a lot of superstars in this one. I mean, Moxley made his debut. Ospreay was in here. Ishii, some of your top stars. All the big names was in this tournament. Ultra Okada was in here. They do it in two blocks, Block A and Block B. That's two separate tournaments going down. It's pinfall, submission, it's through a point system, and then the winners of the blocks, the ones who score the most pinfall victories or the most points overall from Block A, competes against the overall pinfall and point winner from Block B. The two of them compete in the final, and then you have your tournament winner. This year's Block A winner goes to Kota Ibushi, and this year's B block winner goes to the Switchblade, Jay White. Those two competed in the final, with your winner being Kota Ibushi. I believe it's his first. I tried looking it up. I don't believe he's won the tournament before. He was in last year's final, lost to Tanahashi. But other than that, I think this is his first victory, which is great because this is the guy who was kind of in limbo for a little bit there. A lot of talk, a lot of discussion going on with Ibushi as to whether or not he would follow his friend Omega to the States to go to AEW. A lot of concern, a lot of conversation. New Japan in a position where they didn't really want to lose any more talent than they already had. It's kind of difficult to lose as much talent as New Japan has over the year and still maintain a status in which that they've accrued over the years, but they've done that. They've built new stars. They've had new talent come in to refresh the ranks. New Japan has been a godsend, really, to the pro wrestling world because with AEW coming around, it's getting a lot of publicity, but it's not really making any headway. It's still a young upstart company. Ring of Honor has gone down just a little bit. The UK area was super white hot for a while, but the WWE made sure to kill that fucking dead. It's not completely dead. Still a lot of great talent over the UK. I'm not going to say it's a dead zone, but at the same time, it's not as hot as it was because the WWE went in there and pretty much gutted all the talent out. So New Japan got gutted as well, but New Japan has made a very good stretch here. I'm bringing in new talent, some big names to try to round these tournaments out. So they've done an amazing job in doing that. Kota Ibushi being one of their top stars for the last few years, being in that limbo, but then having Ibushi step up and pretty much say, I'm a New Japan guy, I'm not really going anywhere, I want to commit. He wants to be the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, that's a goal of his. He made that quite clear when he re-signed. I don't want to just be another guy in the roster, I want to be on the top. And New Japan is going ahead with that, and they're pretty much saying, thank you, we're going to get behind you. Ibushi has shown New Japan the commitment. New Japan is accepting it willingly. Super dope relationship between the two, and it shows here. A lot of great talent in this tournament, and Ibushi would walk away with the win. And not just any win. He defeated the former IWGP Heavyweight Champion in Jay White to win this tournament. Big step up. Looks like he's going to be a main event player moving forward. This guy has had great matchups with some of the best in New Japan as it is. Like I mentioned, he was in last year's final, losing to Hiroshi Tanahashi. So when you get in the ring with Tanahashi, with the bright lights on, as it is with the G1 Climax, you already got some pedigree to you. So Ibushi, congratulations to him and the G1 Climax. I have to say just really quickly, I mentioned this on social media, there were a lot of people, and you can always tell. You can always tell who the new fans are and who the new fans aren't. And you can always tell really quickly because as soon as the G1 thing was really coming to its climax, no pun intended, all you heard or all you saw were people making comparisons to the WWE because the WWE recently also announced But they were bringing back the King of the Ring. The King of the Ring tournament. The WWE's version of a prestigious tournament. It's not the same as G1. Not even close. The format's not the same. The look is not the same. The prestige is not the same. The way the tournaments are used are not the same. There is literally no comparison between G1 and the King of the Ring, except for the fact that both of them are labeled tournaments. That's it. G1 doesn't even have tournament brackets. It's just labeled a tournament. That's it. Because of the way that it is formatted. But they're not. There's different versions of a tournament, and these two tournaments are not the same. So, why do I bring that up? Not just because the WWE just recently announced the King of the Ring is returning, but fans, once again, you can always find out. They've been sharing memes, they've been sharing pictures, and the scuttlebutt on the internet is the WWE is bringing back the G1 Climax. The WWE is bringing back the King of the Ring. They wish they had the G1 Climax. Because the G1 was doing so well, this past G1 is widely considered by many hardcores one of the better tournaments that it's ever been. It just looked great. So the WWE is bringing back the King of the Ring to counteract that. Now, can I sit here and openly admit to you that the WWE has not once thought, hey, we have a tournament, maybe we should do something with it? No. Of course the WWE is going to see something like the G1, and they're going to say, well, we've got a tournament, let's do ours. Capitalize on that. That's duh. I'm not going to sit here and argue with that. That's an obvious one. But to say that the WWE is trying to be like New Japan because they're doing a tournament. Now, they're not trying to be like anything. Not a thing. I think I put it on social media. The G1 was created in 1978. It became G1 by name, by label, in 1991. Okay? The King of the Ring tournament began in 1985. These two concepts have been together for well over two decades, some even longer. There's no comparison between the two tournaments in any fact, in any way whatsoever. The only thing WWE is capitalizing on is fans' current interest in tournaments. That's it. There's no copying of concepts. It's not the same concept. There's no copying of anything. The only thing that they're doing is capitalizing. That's the C word you're not using right. They're not copying. They're capitalizing on the idea that the G1 Classic currently has everyone in the mood for a tournament, especially since it was good. And they're going to go ahead and bring back their version because, again, they have one. They're going to bring back their version of a tournament in the King of the Ring. So if you're sitting there comparing the two, WWE's biting storylines, of which, by the way, a tournament's not a storyline. It's a fucking tournament. You can do storylines within the tournament, but a tournament's not a storyline. There's nothing storyline related to a fucking tournament. It's literally just a tournament. It's it. It's a sport format. That's it. That's all it is. So you can keep bitching and moaning about the WWE copying and blah, blah, blah. They're not copying anything. They're capitalizing on current fan interests, which is what a business is supposed to do. If you're a businessman and you don't want to capitalize on the current climate of your customers, you're stupid. That's a dumb thing, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Now let's talk a little bit about this King of the Ring coming up. We haven't had one in a while, and to be honest with you, the prestige of it has dropped a little bit. Not just because of its vacantness, but because the last few winners, we really haven't done much with any of the winners. Originally, this King of the Ring tournament really got over the young guys. And eventually, it got used as a storyline for one or two. But there was one year. What was that one year? I think Hornswoggle was one. And then, like, the one that William Regal won, where there was, like, really no wrestlers in it. And then it was, like, a day tournament. That's not how you use the King of the Ring. But this tournament, this version of a tournament, 16-man, span over a few weeks, this is the way the King of the Ring tournament was meant to be done, and this is the way the King of the Ring of the tournament should be done. Some of my favorite pay-per-views in the past, when I was growing up back in the 90s, was the King of the Ring tournaments. I actually loved very much the King of the Ring tournament. I loved the way Triple H became the king and beat up Mankind and used that to kind of spurn off into a huge storyline for the summer. I loved, obviously, the awesome 316 promo. Move a little forward on. I loved the way that The Rock and Ken Shamrock, that final King of the Ring matchup where Ken Shamrock walks away the King of the Ring. I loved all that stuff. Some of my favorite pay-per-views of all time have been the King of the Ring and the King of the Ring tournament. So the fact that it's back is awesome, and not just back, but it's loaded top to bottom with fucking talent. We have one side for the Raw guys, one side for the SmackDown guys. The Raw versus SmackDown matchup will be the final. On the Raw side, Cesaro and Samoa Joe will meet in the first round. Ricochet, Drew McIntyre in the second. Cedric Alexander versus Sami Zayn, and The Miz versus Baron Corbin. On the SmackDown side, Kevin Owens and Elias, Ali versus Buddy Murphy, Chad Gable versus Shelton Benjamin, Apollo Crews versus Andrade. Here's why I love this tournament off the bat. Nobody in this tournament. Maybe Shelton Benjamin, but he's there for a reason, and I'll get into that. Nobody in this tournament doesn't belong to be in this tournament. There are no legends. There are no old match. Nothing. Every single person in this tournament, I'm going to be honest with you, I can see winning this thing, with the exception, again, of Shelton Benjamin. I don't think Shelton's going to win this, but again, he's going to serve a purpose. I'll tell you in a second. But I could see Sami Zayn doing this. I could see Cedric doing this. I could see Joe doing this. I could see Owens doing this. I could see Buddy Murphy doing this. You've got a few people here that are on the cusp, and then you've got a few people that could really use this win as a build from the bottom to the top. Obviously, a guy like Kevin Owens, you look at, you say, well, he's looking for this big babyface run. He could use it. Samoa Joe has had a string of high-profile losses, and yet still his star seems to keep rising. He can use this. Now, first of all, that first matchup, Cesaro and Joe, both of these guys desperately need big wins. This would be huge. Cedric and Sami Zayn, I love the athletic matchup there, but whoever wins this is going to be putting the next guy over, which is fine. I've got no problem with that. Ricochet and Drew McIntyre, sucks to be Ricochet, but you've got to go Drew McIntyre in this. He's got to be one of the favorites in this whole tournament. We go back to the SmackDown side. I spoke about Kevin Owens already going against Elias. That's an easy one there because of the storyline already in place. Owens beating up all of Shane's friends. I can easily see Owens winning this. And plus, Elias doesn't really need this win. Ali and Buddy Murphy, that's a tough one because they like Ali, and he missed his shot when he got hurt and kicked in the eye and whatnot. But Buddy Murphy right now is hot. He's fuego. Everyone's talking about him. He's got the size. He's got the ability. He could be a top star in WWE. Even if he doesn't win, a semifinal to final matchup would be huge for his career. Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. There is only one purpose Shelton has. We've got to get Chad Gable back on the map. Somehow, someway, he has fallen through the cracks. I don't know how. But Chad Gable should be, on paper, if you look at this list of talent on here, should be one of the favorites. And he's not. He's severely overlooked in this. And I'm glad that the next matchup, because he's going to face the winner, he will beat Shelton Benjamin. I have no doubt about that. But Chad Gable is going to be facing the winner of Apollo Crews and Andrade. And to be honest with you, I really hope it's Andrade that he's facing. Nothing against Apollo Crews. Fantastic athlete. But I need Gable and Andrade in there just for the sake of styles. I just want to see those two styles get together and put on some classics. There's a million ways you can go with this. I'm not going to pick any winners. I'm not even going to pick the finals. I want to see how these first round matchups play out. And I'll probably talk about it more as we continue. But I'm just excited as fuck that we're even talking about a King of the Ring tournament. Be honest with you, because it's pretty dope, and I think it's going to get a lot of people excited. And speaking of excited, I got a chance to see SummerSlam. Just before I left on vacation, I got a chance to see SummerSlam. Good show. What happened here? My iPad just bleeped on something. What's going on over here? Future Fight. Marvel. My fucking son. My fucking son and his Marvel shit. Oof, that felt weird to say out loud. But anyway, yeah, SummerSlam. I got a chance to see SummerSlam beforehand. Dopeness all around. I actually had a pretty good time watching it. Yeah, it had its slow moments, and as we predicted on the round table, the matches that I weren't interested in too much did not get my interest. But the ones that I was interested in totally did. Obviously, everyone's talking about Bray Wyatt and talking about The Fiend, and everyone's talking about what they're talking about. But what no one's talking about, and I want to talk about it because I got super hyped, Edge. Edge being at SummerSlam was huge, not just because it was in Toronto and it's an obvious cheap pop, but I got excited about Edge because Edge executed a spear, and that was huge to me So I immediately saw it, and my wife was watching it with me, and he executed the spear, and I damn near frog splashed the floor from a standing position. I jumped up out of the air. That was probably the biggest pop from me for the whole night, and I wasn't even on the main show. I didn't pop that hard for Bray Wyatt's entry. I popped hard for the Edge spear. Now, my wife brought it up, and if you're probably thinking about it, okay, you're probably saying to yourself the same thing my wife did. Okay, hypocrite, right? Because the last few weeks I've been talking about how I'm so over the nostalgia. I'm so over the old guys coming black and blase, 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 blah. This is different, and I'll explain it to you the same way I explained it to my wife. This is different, and the reason why it's different is because I stated on the show and in private, both public and private, that I was over the nostalgia because they kept shoveling the same people over and over and over and over again. It's the same people over and over and over. And I'm not going to say that Edge hasn't made his appearances, but much like the Daniel Bryan situation, Edge did not retire and refuse to let it go. Edge had it taken from him. Edge had it taken from him. He retired because of a brutal and over time worn out neck injury. And he had to retire, and he almost died from a chair shot from Alberto Del Rio and the whole story. If you don't know about that story, go ahead and Google, do some YouTubing. I don't have a whole lot of time to get into the retirement part. But he was retired. And as a matter of fact, there was a pretty high no contact rule with him for a long time. People couldn't touch him. He couldn't touch people. He would appear and do, you know, little promos here and there, or little reunions or whatnot, and the kazoos, but he would never touch. The fact that he went out there, no talking, just looked Elias in the face and speared his ass, that was it for me. Because a spear is an attack to the shoulder, which is connected to the neck. And I immediately popped because I said to myself, the neck is good. And sure enough, unconfirmed, I'm going to say that right now, unconfirmed, but there have been a lot of conversation taking place after Edge's appearance, that Edge has been cleared, that Edge has seen the doctors, that everything is looking good on Edge's side. Now, also, to state here, Edge has come public. You know, he's got a podcast as well, and has stated that while his neck is good, and while, yes, he's been cleared, he said himself, I could have a WWE match tomorrow. Those were Edge's words. He wants to make everyone aware he is retired. He is not returning. He loves being with his family. He's got kids. You know, his wife's on the road, which is great, but he's retired. He is retired. So that's done and over with. He's not going to come back, which I'm glad he nipped it in the bud early, because all people ever do is just leave it in the wind so that they can get that will he or won't he cash in. But he didn't do that. He took it away. The one thing he did not take away, though, and I'm going to go ahead and say it because I would love to see it, he did not take away a possible WrestleMania situation. Now, again, we're seeing hypocrite. We just had two legends come on the SummerSlam show, and you criticized it pretty heavily. How dare you, sir, sit here and talk all this trizash about Goldberg and Trish Stratus, but yet sit here and say you want Edge at WrestleMania. Here's why. Goldberg was just here not too long ago, and he shit the bed. He has shit the bed the entire time he's been active, which has been the last 2 or 3 years. Trish Stratus came back for Evolution, came back and wrestled the night after as well. Now, that's not a whole lot of coming back. But she wasn't that goddamn impressive then, and she wasn't that goddamn impressive at SummerSlam. Everybody wants to give her credit for stepping up to the challenge against Charlotte. And I asked the question, did she step up to the challenge, or is Charlotte that great? I'm leaning towards Charlotte's that great. Everybody else is going to have their opinion, that's fine. I'm not going to say that Trish did a bad job at SummerSlam. She didn't. But Charlotte hit, I said it at the round table, I'll say it again. Charlotte hit it right on the money. She came out and said that Trish traded in her wrestling boots for a minivan and kids. To be a soccer mom one day, a pro wrestler the next, ain't easy, and it don't matter if you're a Hall of Famer or not. She's in shape. She's not old. Not to the point where most broke down wrestlers are. She got out at a good time. Her body is still intact. She can go out there and she can perform. Not saying Trish did a bad job. What I'm saying is, Charlotte's that good. Charlotte can go out there with a broomstick. Just like her dear old dad. She can go out there with a broomstick and the whole fucking thing would look fantastic. But as far as the nostalgia and on Edge, it was taken from him. Now, if Edge had a WrestleMania moment, got hyped, and then came back for Backlash and Extreme Rules, and came back for another SummerSlam, then I would, okay, no, this is too much. This is too much. Nostalgia gone wrong. But the success story of having the entire your entire career taken from you, and then you fight back, and you get healthy, and you get cleared, and you come back, and you're this big, badass, sawed-off superstar, I mean, come on. That's pretty fucking cool. And I know it's cool, and I know you'll like it, because you already saw this episode once with Daniel Bryan. And all of you cried, and all of you had your moments. You'll have it here, too. Because, quite frankly, Edge, in my opinion, did more for the WWE than Daniel ever did. Daniel was a heartfelt favorite. So was Edge. And I think having that WrestleMania moment, and you could do it the same way you did Kurt Angle. He doesn't have to win, but to have Edge, I think Edge's real value comes in the program. It comes in the build-up. To have him program against somebody, pretty much, keep it short, from Rumble to Mania. Edge feuding with somebody leading up to WrestleMania, whoever that person would be a humongous superstar. Humongous. And I'm going to go ahead and give you just the guy who should do it. You really, really want to get a guy over. You really want to get a guy over both as a storyteller and as a wrestler, and you only have a short amount of time to do it. If you're looking to get Buddy Murphy over, this is it. This is your card. I'm going to pitch it right here. Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy and Edge. I think the two of them would be money as far as program goes. Because I think people are sleeping on Buddy Murphy. I think people look at him, they see the body, they see the work. They think he's a wrestler. They don't really see much of the story. I think you put him in there with Edge and you change the whole damn game. I'm going to go ahead and make that pitch right now. I'm high, heavy on Buddy Murphy. I've been heavy on him since NXT. The 205 Live stuff, that was all stuff that I saw coming because he's that good. You guys saw a little piece with Roman Reigns. That's nothing compared to what this guy can really do if he's in the right position. And I think Edge, burn-off feud, him going over at Edge at WrestleMania, even if it's an undercard, that program alone would be enough to get to make him a star. Or at least get the ball rolling on his career. I think that would be enough. I truly believe that would be enough. So that's that there on Edge. I got super excited about that. I don't think he's coming back. He has stated that he's not coming back full-time. I don't really want full-time, to be honest with you. I don't really want full-time. If I can get Edge to come back and put over a guy and then be out and then be gone, that would be the best scenario ever of all time. Be honest with you, I don't know why he doesn't do more work with NXT. And I don't mean in a sense of work, because I think that's what Shawn does. I think Shawn Michaels works a little bit more with the in-ring stuff. I know he does storyline stuff with the guys, but man, just character-wise, being able to get into the mind of someone like Edge would be huge for some of these stars. He doesn't even need to be there all the time. Just every now and then poke his head in, especially since his wife is working there now. That would be really cool. I think the more that younger talent can work with older, and not just any older talent, but talent that has a wider variety of experiences, always the best. That's the way that I got it in this business. This way a lot of people that I know got it in this business. Picking the brains of those who have already done it and who have already experienced it, know exactly what the fuck is going on. Those are the best people to pick brains. The best people. Because they've got it all figured out. All figured out. Love it. Big time stuff going on at SummerSlam. I'm enjoying that stuff immensely. I forgot to mention one little thing. And I'm going to go off the air here soon. Like I said, I'm on vacation. This wasn't going to be a long episode. But I wanted to put up some new content. And that's what we're doing here. But there's one more thing that I want to talk about before I get up out of here. And we're going to go back to New Japan for just a second. And I'm not talking specifically about New Japan. But just a personal story that I wanted to talk about here. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And I've gotten a chance to work with him for a long time, actually. And I wanted to bring this up. I've mentioned a little bit before in the past, but one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, The Amazing Rey. And one of the reasons why he's one of my favorites of all time, not just because of his size and speed, his knowledge. This guy is one of the smartest little guys I've ever met in my entire life. The way that he uses his speed, the way that he uses his agility is second to none. He's one of the greatest cruiserweights of all time. I can make a strong argument he's the best. I could, if I had the time right now to spend, I would. But I can tell you right now, he's one of the greatest cruiserweights, light heavyweights, whatever the case, X Division, whatever, of all time. Definitely one of the most innovative, definitely one of the most creative. And this is coming not just for me, but the one guy who would probably be against him in that category, Rey Mysterio, has said it with his own mouth. I was there in the building, got a chance to speak with him in the back. Rey Mysterio, one of the greatest luchadors of all time. He calls himself the greatest luchador of all time, for Christ's sake. Looks at Amazing Red and says, yeah, he's one of the best I've ever seen in my entire life. High praise to the max. That's where Amazing Red is. And for those of you who don't know, if you're in the New York area, you probably know, but if you're outside of the New York area, he recently retired. He's had a string of really bad injuries to his feet and to his legs, and it's really harmed him a bit. And he's not afraid to go all out, but he's only really afraid to go all out for the right reasons, and he hasn't really been given much of a right reason. So why not call it quits, which is what he's done. He retired officially a few months ago. Well, somehow, some way, somewhere along the line, a particular someone got a hold of the idea that he's going to be retiring. And that someone is the one guy that you could probably call the best super junior in the world today, Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay made it public and made it clear that before Amazing Red walks through those doors and hangs up the boots, he wants a piece of Red. Apparently, Red is one of his influences as a performer, considers him one of the best high fly wrestlers of all time. Will not let Red rest until he gets his hands in what Will is calling his own personal dream match. This was all said on social media. Well, we didn't hear much from Red. And the more that we just kept hearing from Will over and over, even down to press conferences, he was name-dropping Amazing Red. He wanted that match. He wanted to get in the ring with Red. This is something he desperately wanted to do. And all of a sudden, New Japan makes the announcement. The Super J tournament, which is for the Super Juniors, is being brought back. They're starting it late August. I think it's next week now that I think about it. They're starting it up, and Amazing Red will be a competitor in that tournament. He's been invited, it's been accepted, and of course, as luck would have it, first round matchup, Will Ospreay versus the Amazing Red. Now, there's going to be a lot of talent on that on those cards in that tournament, but on a personal level for myself, I'm looking forward to this one, and the reason I'm looking forward to this one is because I know for a fact but there are two different Amazing Reds. One where he's trying to put on an amazing match, but trying to get the other guy over, because the whole point, I guess he figures in his career at this point, his job is to get as many people over as he possibly can. But this particular match with the Super Jays, I don't think we're going to get the first red. I think we're going to get the second red. The second red is my favorite red. That red is the show stealer who doesn't give a fuck what anybody has to say about what he does in that ring. Because to be honest with you, there are very few who have ever lived who can do what he does inside of a wrestling ring. And if there's one guy who would be in that category, of the very few, Will Ospreay is in that category. This is going to be an amazing, no pun intended, an amazing matchup. And a true, very rarely identified here, a true dream match. There aren't very many left, folks. There aren't very many dream matches left. This will truly be, no pun intended, this will truly be a dream match. A matchup between yesterday's best against today's best. You can throw a dart over the last 10 or 15 years, and I promise you, you won't hit anybody that was nearly as good as the Amazing Red when it comes to the high fly style. If you threw a dart today, the only person you could probably hit is Will Ospreay. Now, I know that some of your favorites There's a lot of good high flyers out there, some of them even great, some of them world class. But as far as a matchup is concerned, this is the best matchup you're going to get anywhere in the world. So I know a lot of people are looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this, both on a professional level and a personal one. And this is going to be, I haven't seen the Super Jays in a while. I used to watch them religiously, to be honest with you. I haven't seen them in a long time. But I will be sitting front row in the House of O. I will be sitting front row on my new couch. I have a new couch now. There's two couches in my apartment now. But I will be sitting there front and center, prepared, beyond belief here, to watch what I am considering right now and what I am telling you to your face or your ears, however you're listening to this. This will be one of, if not the greatest Super Junior matches literally of all time. I don't speak in hyperbole. If you've listened to this show before, I don't overhype. If anything, I try to dehype because I feel like sometimes overhype hurts more than it helps. But in this particular case, this has the potential on paper to be one of the greatest Super J tournament and, quite frankly, high-flying matches of all time. The technique, the skill, the execution that will be on display in this matchup will be second to none. This is going to be one of the ones that we talk about when it's over. This is going to be one of the ones that we talk about for a long time. And I'm excited. I'm happy for my former boss here. And personally, I cannot wait to see what these guys can physically put together inside of a professional wrestling ring. I can't wait. This is going to be sick. Okay, so thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for downloading so much. Thank you guys for sharing everything that you guys have shared. And most importantly, thank you guys for enjoying. I'm going to go get drunk off my ass and go sit in a pool and enjoy myself. But we're going to be back to work just 1 week from today. We're going to be back to work, guys. So thank you, and I will see you guys later.
100 episodes, now pay him.
And make sure that you buy my husband's t-shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/AJOUM. Please, he needs this.
Listen to my daddy's show. He's the best, so I don't know.